Chapter 12. Cal recovered himself.
Ledak,
he voxed. His tongue was thick, his head hammering.
Rovil!
He blinked heavily, clearing the mist across his eyes. He flexed a gauntlet. It worked. That was something.
Anyone?
He pushed himself to his feet. He must have fallen. He was disorientated. Everything around him seemed to move sluggishly. He blinked switched to the ship channel.
Status,
he rasped. The Vorkorda's communication operator's voice, when it came, sounded relieved.
We have been concerned, Lord. Your signal was lost. Is all well?
Cal didn't know. He felt nauseous. The space around him was empty and dark. He felt as if he'd forgotten something important.
I don't have a lock on Ledak or Rovil,
he said.
They were with you on the transition. We no longer have loci for them.
Cal started to walk. The metal walls around him were scorched and dented. He ran a proximity check and brought up nothing. He couldn't even detect the Vorkorda on the locator matrix. His skin prickled with uneasiness.
Did you find anything over there?
Queried the operator.
What?
The outpost lord. Do you require anything further?
Cal stopped walking. His head throbbed with pain, slowing his thoughts and making him feel sicker. He had definitely forgotten something. Why couldn't he think?
There's nothing here. Nothing here.
A pause.
We await orders, Lord,
said the operator haltingly. Cal felt like smashing his head against the wall. Anything to clear it.
I'm coming back.
Very good. I have a strong signal for you now. Lowering voids. You may transition with...
Wait!
As soon as the operator uttered the words, lowering voids, Cal remembered. The white scar. The iron hand.
Wait!
It was too late. The ether surged around him again, raging this time, flaring crimson as he dissolved into it. In the fraction of a heartbeat as his body hurtled between realms, he remembered it all. When he rematerialized in the teleport chamber, he was not alone. Cal's hands leapt for his bolter, but too slowly. The white scar's witch raised a finger, immobilizing him. In an agony of frustration, Cal could only watch as the witch reached for a curved dagger. He could only watch as the blade pushed against his throat, nestling at the junction between helm and gorget.
"How long you been corrupted?" the witch asked.
Cal found that his lips could move again. He stared defiantly back at the White Scar's legionary.
"Since we knew the truth,"
he replied. The witch looked at him bewildered.
"Truth? What truth drive you to this?"
"The only one."
"One truth?"
The White Scar shook his head.
"How foolish."
Then Cal's lips stopped working again. He heard the klaxons of other teleportation chambers and the heavy clump of power-armored boots landing on metal. He felt the witch's power withdrawing from his mind like water running from a glass. He tried to speak again, to lash out, to get to his bolter. But the witch wasn't stupid. He pressed the dagger firmly, slicing clean through the armor seals. Cal felt the blade bite, parting his flesh and sinew with a hiss of faint disruptor charge, before his vision faded to black. Yasugai pushed the body aside and strode out of the chamber. Henrikos emerged from another opposite, followed later by Zeyvan and three salamanders.
"Disgusting,"
spat Henrikos. Yasugai looked at him quizzically.
"Sorcery,"
said the Iron Hands legionary by way of explanation, shaking his hands loosely as if trying to shed some contagion.
"Sorcery was the root of it all."
No,
said Yasugai, starting to walk.
Not at all.
Zeyvan fell in alongside him. His hammer, held one-handed, crackled with a soft sheen of energy. He clutched a gold-limbed bolt pistol in his other gauntlet. Yasugai's eyes were drawn to the weapons. The sons of Vulcan knew how to make their tools beautiful.
He has a point, Zaven said.
The doors at the end of the corridor slid open, revealing two robed crew members hurrying towards the teleportation chambers. As they saw the space marines, their eyes widened and they scrambled to get out of the way.
Iron Hand's technology conceals our presence on station, said Yasugai calmly, bursting the crew's hearts with a single gesture. My stormcraft gets us here. Even.
Not quite, said Henrikos, ignoring the mortals as they slid glassy-eyed to the floor. Iron Hand's technology is not forbidden.
They entered a wider corridor, lit red at floor level. The space reeked of blood, and daubed sigils ran glossily down the steel panels. More crew emerged, some accidentally, some drawn by the noise. Zaven dispatched two with shots from his bolt pistol. Yasugai silenced four more.
Only because it's not fully known, the Stormseer replied. Just what really takes place on Medusa.
They passed an intersection, and Henrikos paused to loose a volley of bolter rounds down a connecting accessway, plastering it with blood and tattered robes.
It's not the same, he growled,
swiveling around to finish off a couple of stragglers. By now, warning clarions had broken out.
I hid our signals with machines, just devices. You tap into prescribed powers.
Not prescribed to me.
As they worked their way closer to the bridge, mortal troops in heavier armor began to arrive, dropping into defensive formations at corridor junctions and laying down waves of projectile fire. Zaven pressed ahead, his armor deflecting the incoming rounds in a whirl of sparks.
Brothers, this isn't really the time, he said, lumbering into hammer range.
Henrikos pushed to join him, taking glancing blows to his battle plate.
You might be right,
he grunted, working his bolter methodically. Yasugai came along in their wake, covered by the steady presence of the salamanders around him. The corridors echoed with bolter fire. The Wordbearer's human troops were stubborn and committed, but no match for power-armored opponents. They died in their dozens, clogging the walkways. None of them ran. None screamed for mercy. They fought on hopelessly. They were just like their masters had been.
They truly believe in this, thought Yasugai,
watching more of them thrown clear by Zaven's expert blows.
This is now their course.
One of the mortals broke through Henrikos's assault then and ran at the White Scars legionary. He carried a lasgun, and his face was fixed rigid with determination. Yasugai regarded him for a moment before swatting him aside, barely watching as the man's body slammed into the wall and his weapon clanged to the deck. It was depressing to witness such fervor.
Take ship swiftly, he voxed to the rest of the makeshift squad. Go fast. No honor in this fight.
Torgon made his way steadily through the star spear's lower reaches. The ambient grind of the warp engines thrummed around him. The ship was traveling fast. Wherever the Kargon was taking the Legion, it was with his habitual speed. Torgon passed a few menials on the way down. They bowed and hurried on, barely looking at him. He reached the designated location and drew up to the slide door. He paused for a moment. As he lifted his finger to the entry rune, a faint chill passed through him, momentarily, like a fever shiver. He depressed the rune with a soft click.
A state nature of business, came Nozan's voice.
I can't say, said Torgon.
He heard the faint whir of a vox detector confirming his identity, and the door slid back. Nozan wore his cowl. Behind him the chamber was dark and flickering, as though lit by candles.
It has been a while, said Nozan. And always a pleasure, said Torgon, pushing past him.
The chamber beyond was fuller than usual. More than 40 figures stood in a loose circle, each wearing a cowl and long robes. The light was low, almost theatrically so. Torgon took his place. Something shimmered at the centre of the circle, like air displaced by a thruster afterburn. He couldn't focus on it. Every time he tried, his eyes slid away from it. None of the others seemed to be making the attempt, so he gave up.
"Brothers!"
came a voice from the far side of the circle. Torgon recognized Hibu's accent.
"The lodge is expanded. Members from across the fleet have joined us. For those new to this, welcome. The circle will keep expanding, faster now that matters are in motion."
Torgon listened carefully. He still didn't know what this was about. Lodge gatherings were normally small affairs, confined to a single ship. Perhaps this demonstrated that things were finally coming to a head. Secrecy. Secrecy. Surely the need for it would dissipate soon.
"It is difficult to do this while in the warp," Hibu went on, "though not as difficult as on Chondax, and we can all be glad to be rid of that world."
A few gruff chuckles. Torgon had to work not to peek under the shadow of the cowls around him. Why were they all still concealed?
"Now that the Kargan has taken us into the void, opportunities arise. Ones we have been waiting for a long time. Try to look at the light. For those new to it, trust me, it does become easier."
Torgon's eyes flicked back to the circle's center. He narrowed his gaze, concentrating hard. For a moment, all he saw was a faint tremor of movement. Trembles, vibrations. Then something clarified. A column, less than a meter tall, hazy at the edges. It was translucent, almost transparent, but definitely there, like a pillar of glass, or maybe water, held rigid before them. It remained hard to look at. Torgon felt his eyes sting and blinked away tears. A dim sense of nausea stirred in his stomach, accompanied by the awareness, somehow, of tremendous power boiling away close by.
"What is this, brother?"
came a voice from halfway around the ring of bodies. Torgon didn't recognize the speaker, but the tone was much as his would have been had he spoken himself. Uneasy, suspicious.
"Calm yourself," said Hibu. "The nausea is normal. It fades. This is no different to the art of the Zadyan Aga."
Torgon kept watching. Once he had started, it was hard to pull his eyes away. Slowly, shapes emerged at the heart of the glass pillar. He caught a glimpse of something long and sinuous, curling around an invisible axis like a flame. Then, more clearly, words emerged. Korchin script, glowing a dull silver, hanging in the body of the pillar and refracted as though underwater. Torgon traced the meaning as the letters flickered in and out of existence.
"Your course is known. Your destination is known. A meeting will be possible. Until then, work as you have been doing. Do not force matters. The War Master is aware. He approves."
Torgon felt his heart beating fast. At the mention of the War Master, the pulse picked up a little more. Hibu stepped into the circle, his face mostly hidden by his cowl.
"What of the Alpha Legion? We were not warned of that."
For a while, the pillar remained empty. Then slowly more words emerged.
"It is difficult. We do not have that information. Alpharius is..."
There was a pause.
"Unpredictable."
"Any instructions, then?"
"You have them. Your course is known. Your destination is known. The meeting will take place. Until then, stay faithful. The truth will become apparent."
"Is it not already apparent?"
asked another cowled figure. Torgon didn't recognize that voice either. It was hard, clipped, heavily Trigorian.
"Things are finally revealed. We could reveal ourselves too.
There is nothing to be ashamed of. I have nothing to be ashamed of.
Again a long pause. Then the glass pillar glowed with movement again.
I understand. No, you have everything to be proud of. But the War Master arranges this for a reason. Treachery is in all places. No legion is free of it, not even his. The Imperium's fate depends on it. Your legion's fate depends on it.
What was producing the words? It almost had the character of cogitator spiel, churning out platitudes, though some of the phrases were clearly answers to questions. Torgon watched the lines of text as they spiraled and danced in the pillar, his eyes stinging a little less the more he read.
Trust to this. Your Khan is as noble as he is powerful. He will see the cause for what it is. He will be shown the truths of Nykaea and the truths of Davin. We have every confidence. We have every confidence because of you all. Stay true.
The glass pillar began to ripple out of existence. The air around it closed in, swamping the fragile silver script. Torgon narrowed his eyes, trying to make out what remained.
For enlightenment. Freedom from tyranny. Fraternity.
The last words were almost illegible.
For the Imperium of Man.
Then it flickered out. Torgon breathed in deeply, suddenly aware of how hard he had been concentrating. His skin prickled. A line of sweat ran down the small of his back. No one spoke for a while. Then the lights rose in intensity. When Torgon blinked, he saw reverse colour impressions of the pillar on his retinas.
"What was that?"
asked one of the gathering. Hibu pushed his cowl back.
"That is the nature of them, brother. Cryptic. Unfortunate, but necessary."
Others, following Hibu's lead, removed their cowls. One of the speakers, the one with the hard Trigorian accent, kept his on.
"If we were to try less opaque forms of communication, we would be discovered," said Hibu. "The star speakers rely on riddles themselves. Why should this be any different?"
"What is it, then?"
asked one of the brothers. Torgon knew him, Zhou Hutan, of the Brotherhood of the Hunter's Star.
"A conduit," said Hibu. "A way of speaking to those we will join."
"They are already calling the War Master a traitor."
"And you know, Hutan, that this cannot be."
Hibu turned to the others.
"Horus is the only one who ever treated the Khagan with the respect he is due. If we are forced to choose between a tyrant and a liberator, what would a true son of Chogoris do?"
Low mutters of approval ran around the gathering.
"The War Hawk will see it," Hibu went on. "He will see the truth, just as we have done, when the time is right, and we are charged to deliver it."
Nuzan nodded enthusiastically.
"The time is right."
"For what?"
asked Torgon. His growing sense of unease had not abated. He looked around the chamber at 40 pairs of eyes.
"For whispering around weather magic?"
He glared at Hibu.
"We do nothing but talk."
Hibu smiled.
"For now. The Legion is not yet ready for more, brother."
He turned to the rest.
"I know you chafe at this, but believe me, words are more important than you know. Keep speaking to those who can be made to understand. Speak quietly, go carefully, so that our number will spread. Some will never be persuaded. We have been warned of this. If the other Khans order their brotherhoods to silence us, I wish for 100 of their warriors to already be our allies. Harmony will prevail. That is the outcome we should aim for. The Legion will be set on its course, and the Khagan will see that we have taken the honourable path."
Hibu glanced back at Torgon, warning in his eyes.
"In the end, he must choose. All we are doing is easing his decision.
I did not ascend in order to talk, said Torgon, disliking Hibu's sanctimony. I joined to fight. Do you really think you will not?
For a moment, the two of them held one another's gaze. Eventually, Torgon lowered his. He didn't even know why he was arguing. Something about the ritual bothered him and made him irritable. His skin still prickled, as though static rippled across it.
So that is all, said Hibu, addressing the rest. We will convene whenever we may before we reach our destination. Until then, stay in communion. Keep the fire burning.
He bowed, and the assembled lodge bowed in turn. One by one, talking amongst themselves, they broke away from the circle. Platters of food emerged from somewhere, slivers of grilled meats and chartazan pickles. The lodge meeting took on its more usual character, and a hum of earnest conversation broke out. Torgon saw Nozan heading towards him and slipped away, hoping to avoid talking to either him or Hibu. As he made his way towards a pitcher of something smelling alcoholic, a figure blocked his path. It was the Chogorian, the one who had kept his cowl up.
You don't have to stay hidden here, brother, said Torgon. Not if you don't wish to. You are Torgon.
Torgon raised an eyebrow.
And you are direct.
The Chogorian pulled back the cowl. When he saw who it was, Torgon could not hide the faintest twitch of shock.
I am told you know Shaban of the Brotherhood of the Storm, said Hasik Noyan Khan.
His tan, scarred face looked like weather-hardened leather. Torgon nodded, swallowing his surprise.
We fought together on Chondax. He gave me this.
Hasik handed him a lodge medal. Torgon held it up to the light. It looked very much like the one he had been given years ago.
He's a member? Not at all. He found it on Femus.
Torgon looked up into Hasik's steady gaze.
Forgive me. You want to know what does this have to do with you?
Asked Hasik, placing a hand on Torgon's shoulder and guiding him to the wine pitchers.
I like Shaban. He is one of the best in my Urdu. But things are moving fast now, and he has already made some noise, and I would like to stop that.
Torgon eyed him uncertainly.
What happened on Femus? Nothing of our doing, to my knowledge. The snakes, perhaps. But here is the important thing.
Hasik leaned closer, and Torgon saw how deep his scar had been cut.
I do not wish to see him harmed. Perhaps he can be talked to, like Hibu recommends. When the choice is made, I wish to see him on the right side of the argument.
Torgon thought on that.
I don't know, he said. We didn't see eye to eye on everything. He's Chogorian and I'm... You are a White Scars legionary. You are a warrior of Jakatai. This is all that matters.
Hasik fixed him with his penetrating stare. It was hard not to be overawed by his manner. He was one of the few who'd been there from the start, who had fought with the Khargans centuries ago.
Do this for me, Torgon. I will arrange it. Speak to him. I think he will listen. Those who fight together, they share a bond. And if he cannot be persuaded, he will be open to reason. I was.
Hasik poured a glass of wine from the pitcher and handed it to him. Then he poured one for himself.
A long time ago, the Khargan told me the only enemy we had to fear was decadence. Each time he slit an emperor's throat on Chogoris, I saw him whisper the lesson to himself. Never rest, never grow fat, never sit on a throne, for it will become your coffin. When he told me that, I saw it was true, and I loved him more than ever, for I saw how ardently he believed it.
He took a sip, then smiled at Torgon.
We do this for our souls,
he said, and not a shred of doubt existed in his warrior's face.
When the time comes, you will make him understand.
You know what they talk of all across the Crusade? Sanguinius had asked.
Ulanor's steel-grey atmosphere had hung behind the angel, making his rubescent armour shine all the more strongly. The Primarch lived up to his moniker, and his flawless face had glowed with honest amusement. It was not long after Horus's investiture, and the parade ground still swarmed with listless warriors. It would take weeks just to arrange the landers to convey them all to the fleet in orbit above. In the terrace, overlooking the main processional, silken awnings sheltered four Primarchs from the worst of the kicked-up engine grime. There you could forget, if you tried, about the billions of soldiers all trying to find their way off-world at the same time. The Khan, sitting with his brothers, wondered idly who had been given the thankless task of orchestrating it.
"Tell me,"
said Mortarion, though the Khan could see that he was not really interested. The Death Lord had cut an isolated figure during the celebrations, uneasy in all but his own company. In that respect, the Khan had some sympathy with him. Sanguinius leaned back in his throne, dangling a golden goblet casually in one hand.
"They place wagers on which one of us would win in single combat. There are odds. I have seen them."
Mortarion snorted. Fulgrim, the fourth of the gathering, laughed.
"That has been settled, has it not? Our brother Horus wins them all."
Fulgrim and the angel looked similar in some ways. They had the same sculptural faces, the same flamboyant armour. Where Sanguinius looked as though he had been born wearing gold-rimmed pauldrons, though, the Khan had always thought Fulgrim looked to be trying a little too hard. In the end, he guessed that Sanguinius would have been happy to cast off his trappings. Fulgrim gave the impression that he would rather die.
"That would seem to be our father's view," said Sanguinius. "It won't stop the common man making wages."
Mortarion shook his pale head, and the tubes running from his archaic rebreather jangled against one another.
"Stupid."
Fulgrim gave him an amused look.
"Oh, why is that?"
"Because we were made for different fights," growled the Death Lord.
His filtered voice never seemed to shift from a sullen register.
"Come to Barbarous, Peacock, and see how long your feathers last in the smog."
Fulgrim's silver eyebrows rose.
"Perhaps I might, brother." "I would not recommend it," said Sanguinius. "I've seen those chem clouds. I suspect he would stand them longer than you, Fulgrim."
"Some of us had it easier than others,"
Mortarion muttered. Fulgrim looked archly at Sanguinius. An awkward silence fell.
"You should not regret that," said the Khan.
The other three turned, as if surprised that he had a voice.
"The hardship."
Mortarion glared at him sourly. His pallid flesh almost matched Ulanor's overcast, humid skies.
"I don't regret it," he said. "I could regret that only some of us gained our father's favour, though. I could regret that."
Sanguinius took a sip of wine from his glass, serenely unconcerned.
"Brother, you should be pleased for Horus."
"Why?"
Mortarion's expression was pinched.
"Because he was found first. Had the longest to work with his legion. If it had been you, Onchothonia, if it had been me, we might have been in his place now."
Fulgrim sniffed.
"Speak for yourself. Being Warmaster is not the only accolade."
Sanguinius laughed.
"No more talk of your Palatine Aquila, brother. You will only make him more jealous."
"I'm not jealous. Not of Horus, nor of you,"
scowled Mortarion, missing the humour in Sanguinius's voice.
"You don't understand the problem.
Fulgrim leaned forward, clasping his long hands together.
Which is?
While he was leading us, said Mortarion, we fought to gain even a glance or gesture from him. That was acceptable, for none of us are his rival. Nothing in the galaxy is his rival. Now we will fight to gain a glance from Horus. But Horus is not the architect of this. He is just one of us. It will lead to trouble.
Fulgrim shot a tolerant glance at Sanguinius.
He is jealous.
The Khan shook his head. Fulgrim could be irritatingly stupid.
No. He speaks the truth. It should never have happened.
Sanguinius looked at the Khan thoughtfully.
I thought you, of all of us, would feel joy for Horus.
The Khan shrugged.
He is the best of us. I begrudge him nothing, and I have told him so. But it should never have happened.
So, should it have been you?
Asked Fulgrim acerbically. Mortarion snorted again, but Sanguinius said nothing.
I wouldn't have taken it, said the Khan.
Of course you would have, said Fulgrim.
The Khan shook his head.
I have no use for another title. My people give me enough.
Sanguinius smiled.
My brother, I think you are the most inscrutable of us all. I know what Rogel wants, and I know what Rebuti wants. But even after so long, I have no idea what you want.
He wants to be left alone, said Fulgrim. To shoot off into the stars and hunt down Xenos on those delightful jet bikes. They're devilishly fast. I heard from a contact on Mars, Jagatai, that you do strange things to your ships.
The Khan shot him a heavy-lidded stare.
I heard you do strange things to your warriors.
Fulgrim's slender face briefly flared with anger, but Sanguinius laughed.
I wonder which one of you would win in a duel, the angel mused. I would like to see that. You both handle a blade like gods.
Name the place, brother, Fulgrim said to the Khan. I'd even travel to Chogoris, if you built a palace to keep the dust from my armour.
The Khan felt the insult. It stabbed at him deeply, but his expression never changed. They could never know, none of them, how much their closed fraternity rankled him.
You would lose, said the Khan.
Fulgrim grinned, but there was something fragile in it.
Oh? You would lose because you would treat it like a game. Like you treat everything. And I would not. You would lose because you know nothing of me. And I know everything of you, because you shout it from the turrets of your battlecruisers. My prowess remains unknown. You have some reputation as a swordsman, brother. But I make no boast when I tell you I would leave you choking on it.
Fulgrim's cheeks flushed. For a moment he looked like he would go for his blade. As ever, Sanguinius's calm smile soothed the moment.
Now I regret bringing this up, he sighed.
In the cause of peace, shall we put this stupidity behind us? We are not at war, and never likely to be. And that is truly a blessing.
Who'd have thought it? Said Mortarion to the Khan, a shrewd glint in his rheumy eyes. You do have your pride. As do you. Then what would be the wager on us, brother?
Asked Mortarion.
What would you pay if we fought?
The Khan sighed.
No. I grow tired of...
Tell me...
Mortarion insisted. Or do you only consider the odds with sword dancers?
The Khan stared back at him. As he did so, he realized that of all his 17 brothers, Mortarion was the only one who, like him, had remained on the utter margins during the Great Crusade. Even Alpharius had played more of a role at the center. The Death Lord was as mysterious to him as the warp. Intriguing.
I don't know, he said truthfully enough. It would be interesting to find out.
Mortarion laughed then, but what could be seen of his expression was crooked. His whole face seemed arranged for dourness, as if levity risked cracking it.
That it would, he said. But we have nothing to fight over, you and I. So breathe easy.
No, asked Sanguinius, seriously this time. Not even the Librarius? The crooked smile faded.
That's different.
The angel took another sip of wine.
How so?
You've not heard the news, then. Our father has taken the matter in hand. I know you take your creation seriously, but you must know it couldn't be suffered to go on.
Fulgrim looked intrigued.
What do you mean, taken in hand?
There will be a reckoning.
The Death Lord shot a wry glance at the Khan, as though reveling in some secret knowledge that would become public very soon.
I'll be there when it happens. I hope you will be there too. Some fights are too important to be left to advocates.
Your mind is not on this, Lord.
The Khan stirred himself. He had no idea where the memory had come from. Ulanor impinged on his thoughts ever more frequently. It was becoming a problem. He bowed in apology to Ilya, who sat opposite him. The candles were burning low, and the go-board was half-populated with a straggling, inconclusive game.
No, it is not, he admitted.
Ilya reached for her glass.
We can play some other time. I'm getting better, though, don't you think?
The Khan rolled his shoulders absently. They were tight and needed movement to loosen them.
You are learning.
Ilya sat back in her seat.
Qing Zha told me where we're going.
Did he?
He also wanted to know if the white scars were typical.
In what way?
Legion cohesion. Singular deployment.
The Khan scratched the back of his neck.
Chondax did that to us. I'd rather have let the Khans follow their own course.
You could have done.
Not anymore.
He reached for his own drink and took a swig. Fermented Adu milk. Not a popular choice, even in his own legion. Ilya looked at him seriously.
Lord, do you remember when I met you?
The Khan nodded.
Horus was there too, she said. I don't know if you were expecting him. If so, it was unkind not to warn me.
That had been the last time they had spoken before the veil had fallen.
I remember how you were, the two of you, so I understand a little of the decision.
The Khan raised an eyebrow.
Do you?
Maybe not. But I did think you were like brothers. I can see how you might not want to believe... Well, that...
The words dried up. The Khan watched her struggle for a while.
This is not about emotion, Zhu, he said. If Horus has committed crimes, then I will hunt him, just as I would Russ or Alpharius.
We have orders from Terra,
said Ilya, getting to the heart of it.
If things are unclear, surely we follow those first.
The Khan took another sip of milk.
Do you have family?
None living. I had a brother.
Suppose you received notice of a dispute between your father and your brother. Suppose you could not verify which one was in the right. Suppose you had a difficult relationship with your father. You had to choose. Would it be right, if nothing else were known, for you to side with one or the other? Do they not both have a claim on your loyalty?
Ilya's grey eyes did not flicker.
What is difficult about the relationship with the father?
The Khan paused. You share different beliefs.
Significant ones?
Over the destiny of mankind.
That is fairly significant.
Yes. Ilya shrugged.
Terra is where my loyalty is. I swore oaths to the Departamento. For you, this is about strife within the family. For me, it is about where the orders come from.
Orders are not important, the Khan said. Oaths, on the other hand, are. We shall see who has been keeping theirs.
Why? What do you hope to find on Prospero?
I hope to find my brother.
And if the rumors are true?
Then at least I will know who to believe. Ilya hesitated.
But what do you think?
For the moment, the Khan said nothing. The outcome of the game on the board before him was still unclear. It could go either way. Some strategies were yet to play out, including the one he had launched at the very beginning.
I would know if Magnus had died. It would take a lot to convince me he was gone.
He finally reached for a token and placed it on the grid. It didn't change much.
But we shall be there soon, he said.
Then the answers will come.